Hello.
Hi, is this Bill Medley?
This is Bill Medley.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Bill Medley, who's bringing his famous Righteous Brothers to the Birchmere in Virginia on March 26th. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jason. How's everything out there?
Everything's great. You know, very busy.
Okay. I know that. I know.
What can we expect? If our listeners come out, they love the old Righteous Brothers tunes, what can we expect to hear? All the old favorites?
Yeah, they're going to hear every Righteous Brothers song that Bobby and I had hits with. And, yeah, it's a real Righteous Brothers show, and it's all the old songs. And I got a great partner, and boy, he's phenomenal. We're working in Vegas every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We do a residency thing here, and it's just been remarkably successful. I tell the audience we do all the old stuff because there ain't no new stuff.
hey, man, those old ones keep cycling back into the new stuff anyway. So,
those songs
are timeless. All right, cool. Well, you kind of alluded to it, but I know you're partnering with a new singer, Bucky Hurd, after Bobby Hatfield, your longtime partner, passed away back in 2003. So, how talented and how much you miss Bobby, but then also what does Bucky bring to the table?
Well, it's like I say on stage, you can't replace Bobby Hatfield. Bobby Hatfield was, you know, truly one of the great singers. He was just a phenomenal singer. And, you know, we grew up together. Well, you know, from about 21 on, until he was 63, you know, we were friends and partners. And so, I miss him as much off stage as I do on stage. So there's everything to miss. He was a very, very funny guy. And we just had a lot of fun together on stage and off. And, but Bucky, you know, when I, sat down with Bucky, and Bucky and I have been friends for 13, 14 years, and I went in to see him, and he was doing a couple of Journey songs, and he just sang them, just, you know, broke me up. And I said, man, God, this guy can really sing. If you can do Steve Perry, you got a shot at Bobby Hatfield. And So we met, and I had this offer to come to Vegas as the Righteous Brothers. So we met, and because Bucky and I had been friends for quite a while, I knew he was a great guy, and I knew he was a great singer, and that we were going to get along really good off stage and really good on stage. And I told him, I said, you don't have to sound like Bobby. You need to sing like Bobby. You need to hit those notes. And you need to have a good time with me on stage.
Right. Awesome. So when did you guys actually team together and start doing the Vegas residency? How long ago?
It was March of last year.
Okay.
And we went to an area here called Laughlin, which is about an hour and a half away from Las Vegas, to where I told Bucky, I said, we can go there and break the show in. We can go there and die. And nobody will know. and the room seated about 800 people. And so we show up for the, and we were there for 5 nights because I wanted to, you know, break in the show.
Sure.
And I walked in the night and I said, well, how's the crowd tonight? My road manager says, the whole week is sold out. So we didn't get a chance to walk into this very gently. I mean, we had to walk right into it, but my only two questions in my mind was, do people care that there's a Righteous Brothers, and will they accept Bucky? And the first song that Bucky sang by himself, he got a standing ovation, and they just love Bucky. I mean, they just love him, and obviously people care to hear. I don't know if they care about the Righteous Brothers, but I know they care about the music, you know.
They still care about the Righteous Brothers, of course.
Well, I hope.
Take me back to, speaking of which, take me back to sort of the beginning. I know you guys started in like 1962 around the L.A. area, back when it was a group called the Paramours. Take me, memories of the Paramours, and, you know, tell our audiences sort of how you were able to spin that off into the duo, the Righteous Brothers.
Well, Bobby, we were from Orange County, you know, out there where Disneyland is, California. And Bobby had his little rock and roll group, and I had my rock and roll group. He had a group, the Variations. My group was the Paramours. And we had a mutual friend that had been working a lot in Las Vegas, and he was kind of a little tired of it. He wanted to be with his family and so he took Bobby and Bobby's drummer, myself, and my guitar player, and put us all together. And I knew about Bobby, you know, I mean, because back in those days, 62, 61, 62, there wasn't any white guys, especially in California, kind of doing what we did. So
right.
when we got hooked together, Bobby and I just started doing all this rhythm and blues stuff together, duets, and the people just loved it. And Orange County was at that time was very, very, very white. And but there was a Marine base there, El Toro Marine Base, and a lot of the black Marines heard that there was these two white guys down at the club singing rhythm and blues. So they started coming down and in those days, you know, if you had a nice car or a coat or whatever, they'd say, man, that's a righteous looking car, which meant good. What a good looking car. And if they liked you as a friend, they would call you a brother. And, so a lot of times when Bobby and I were coming to work, they would say, hey, how you doing, righteous brother? You know, which meant good friend. And, then the owner of a record company, a friend of mine, came in to see us, and I had written a song, Little Latin Loopy Lou, and we were doing it in the club, and he loved it, so we went in and recorded it, and just because it was just a duet with Bobby and I, we didn't want to be the Paramours, and Bobby said, well, why don't we call ourselves, you know, what the Marines have been calling us, the Righteous Brothers, and they put out Loopy Lou, and man, it just started unfolding from there.
Wow. I never knew that whole backstory with the Marines and the name. And, oh, that's fantastic. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how you built your audience then, sort of through those Marines. That's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. So you mentioned that's how you sort of got the eye of the record label. Take me into your first big number one hit. You've Lost That Lovin' Feeling, man. Everyone can still sing that by heart today. Even younger generations know that one. 1964. How'd that one come together? I know it was Phil Spector recording, and then Barry Mann and Cynthia Whale wrote it. If anyone saw the Carole King musical on Broadway, they saw the whole behind the scenes of that writing duo. But take me into how that song came about.
Well, Phil Spector knew us from California because Little Atnoopy Lou and My Babe, Coco Joe, all those songs were like, you know, West Coast hits. and Phil, you know, was out there in Hollywood. Then he knew all about us, and he had called our record company, Moonglow, and said he wanted to lease the remainder of our contract, which was about two more years left. And they asked us if we wanted to, you know, work with Phil. And we were a little hesitant because he had worked with, you know, mainly girls, you know, Ronettes and Crystals and all that. And so we said, okay, we would like to give that a shot. And so Phil Spector called Barry and Cynthia and said, write the Righteous Brothers a song. I'm going to record them. And they wrote Love and Feeling. But they really kind of wrote it as a little more, you know, faster and a little more bubblegum. And so when we sat down with Phil and Barry Mann to learn it, they were singing it way up kind of high, like, you never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips, you know, way up there.
Gotcha.
And I said, I can't hit that high note. You long time low. I can't get up there. So I said, please, man, tighter pants. And so they lowered it a little bit. And every time they would lower it, they slowed it down. And they literally had to lower it about four keys. And by the time we got to C, the key that we did it in, it was slow and it was, you never close your eyes. You know, it was all a totally different song. And it didn't sound like it was going to be a hit because it sounded like it was on the wrong speed, you know. But I think everything that was wrong with it kind of made it very special. So just one of those records. God bless Barry and Cynthia and Phil Spector.
Absolutely. Do you remember where you were the first time that little song that you thought wouldn't be a hit was suddenly all over the radio? Do you remember the first time you heard it in public?
Yeah, you know, that's really an out-of-body experience when you first hear your record on the radio. And Little Atnoopy Lou was the first one we heard. And we just flipped out. So when we heard Love and Feeling on the radio, it just was amazing because it sounded so great against all the other songs that they were playing, you know.
Yeah, it really stood out, I'm sure. Unique.
Yeah, it stood out. Yeah, very unique.
Absolutely. Awesome. All right, well, maybe hit a couple more. You're My Soul and Inspiration. How'd that one come together?
Soul and Inspiration was supposed to be the follow-up to Love and Feeling. And we were in New York. We just came back from England promoting Love and Feeling. And we were at Barry and Cynthia's house learning Soul and Inspiration. And then Phil Spector and Barry and Cynthia got in some sort of a disagreement. And they sent us back to California to work with some young little girl named Carol King.
And you might have heard of her.
she was a young little girl in those days. So we did. Her and Jerry Goffin wrote the song Just Once in My Life, and it became a hit. But then the two record labels were having a disagreement. And one label is saying, no, I don't want you to go and record. The other label, you know, Phil's saying, no, we got to record. And MGM came up with a good solution. They said, we'll give you $1 million to come over here and we will take care of all the legal expense. So we said, well, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
So we went over to MGM and I called Barry and Cynthia. I said, I need that song that you were teaching us. And and Barry said, oh, geez, we didn't even finish writing that. I said, please, please finish writing it and get it to me immediately. So they finished writing it, and we went in, and I produced Soul and Inspiration, and I just copied what I thought Phil would have done with that record because it was, Phil Spector record, you know.
Right.
And it became number one.
Wow. That's...
But I also produced Unchained Melody, too.
Yeah, that's the next one I was going to ask about. I mean, that to me, I mean, everyone, like, that's the career song, right? That's an amazing song. Take me, but a lot of people probably don't know that. I think you guys originally covered it from someone else first, right? But then, of course, yours is the definitive one now, if I must say.
Yeah, well, Roy Hamilton recorded it, and it was probably... You know, it might have even been before rock and roll took off. I don't know, but Unchained Melody was written for a movie way back there called Unchained. It's about a guy that's in a prison writing a letter to his girl. And I think it was actually an instrumental, and then they wrote some lyrics to it later. And Roy Hamilton and Al Hibbler recorded it, and we fell in love with it. But we fell in love with everything that Roy Hamilton did. And when Bobby and I would record, we couldn't come up with enough duets. So Bobby would do a song by himself, and I would do a song by myself. And I was producing the albums. Phil Spector asked me to produce the albums because he would take too long and spend too much money. So I produced the album. Bobby wanted to do Unchained Melody. I arranged it and produced it, and Phil Spector, I guess, thought it was such a bad record, he put it on the B-side of Hung On You, which was Phil Spector's production, and the disc jockey said, no, we love Unchained Melody, and bam.
Yeah, I'd say. Yeah, you said it was, it's funny, it was written for that other movie, Unchained, because all those years later, it was another movie with Ghost that really repopularized that thing. I mean, it's funny, it's like 30 years after it was originally a pretty big hit for you guys. It became a chart-climbing, massive hit again. Just talk about how much that movie, Ghost, really, you know, surged it all over again.
Well, you know, it's really interesting about movies and or, you know, song being in a movie, because now now Unchained Melody is about, you know, this guy that passes away, you know.
Like eternal love and, in the afterlife.
Yeah, exactly. And the song was actually written by a guy in prison. But you know, because, you know, we had Love and Feeling and Top Gun, and I did the song for Dirty Dancing, Time of My Life.
Yep.
I really feel that Unchained Melody had a lot to do with making Ghost a great movie. You know, I don't think Love and Feeling in Top Gun, you know, turned the corner for that movie. I think it was just a great movie.
It was fun to watch them play that at the piano, though. Tom Cruise, it was fun.
Oh, yeah. No, that was great. It's great.
Oh, it's great. But that's cool. I mean, yeah. But you're entirely right. I mean, Ghost. It was a cool idea for a script and all that. But I mean, you're right. That song, and then even like the instrumental version of the song that they have in the score. You know, they kind of allude to the, it. That's what makes the movie. It's what makes it.
Yeah, it's real haunting and it's real beautiful. And you know, Bobby sang lead on that one. And boy, you know, it's just the guys that wrote that song, they must have died and went to heaven, because they probably just wrote this cute little song for the movie, and you know, 60 years later, it's one of the biggest songs in the world, you know.
It's so funny how that works. Well, you mentioned Time of My Life for Dirty Dancing, another Patrick Swayze movie, by the way. So, yeah, I mean, he owes a lot of his career to you guys, too. Rest in peace. Yes. I mean, talk about working with Jennifer Warnes for that one. Because you won a Grammy for Time of My Life, but it was also, I mean, talk about another song that the movie would not be the classic it is without you guys.
Well, you know, that song was just placed in the movie right at the right place, and the, you know, the climax of the movie, and it was just really special. And actually, Jennifer and I kind of just did the song to work together, because we didn't figure that the movie, you know, a movie called Dirty Dancing, sounded like a bad porno movie back there.
That putting baby in a different corner.
In a whole different situation. But they stayed on me and said, Jennifer wants to sing it if she can sing it with you. And so Jennifer and I went into the studio really just to record, to work together, because I was a big fan of hers, and maybe vice versa. And all of a sudden, this little movie that was going to do nothing became one of the biggest movies, probably the biggest movie of the year. And you know, how can you figure any of this stuff? You know, it's a song that I wasn't even wasn't going to do, you know, but we did it, and they put it in the movie, and it was just absolute. And they were just, and God bless them, they were just certain that Bill Medley should sing this song, you know, and they were relentless. They stayed on me for 3 months, because my wife was expecting our daughter, and I promised her I'd be home for it. They said, has she had the baby yet? And so finally, McKenna, my daughter, was born, and now she's on stage with us. doing Time of My Life with me. She's a great singer.
That's so great.
And so, you know, boy, it's been a hell of a ride, I'll tell you that.
Do you and either you and McKenna or you and Jennifer Warnes, did you ever attempt the big Dirty Dancing lift? You ever tried that?
Oh, God, no. No, thank you. No, thank you. Not even at a young age would I try that.
Oh, that is so funny. Talk about, so how often does she come up on stage with you, your daughter?
Well, you know, in our show, we have two horns and two girls, and McKenna's one of the girls, and she comes down when I introduce Time of My Life. And we do it, and it's really, you know, great in the show, and it's real fun singing with my daughter.
Talk about a blessing, man, to be able to perform with your daughter. I mean, you're one lucky guy. And I think you've been married to Paula since, what, 1986? What's the key to that? Wow.
Wow, you know what? I don't know, man. I tell you, you know, marriage is a whole career. And my first marriage was about 6 years. My second marriage was a year. My third marriage was 6 months, and my fourth marriage has been like 31 years now.
That's
Finally got it right. Got the right girl.
Absolutely. And I mean, you mentioned all those different marriages. I'm so glad you finally have closure with her horror with Karen. I know the DNA evidence just came out like last month, and I've read some of your articles on that. But is it you have a little closure now with that? Now that that's can kind of put that behind you and enjoy your new, you know, the rest of your family life.
Yeah, you know, it's just about now calming down, you know. It kicked up a lot of dust, a lot of dirt when we had to do the press conference and see this guy's picture and Karen's picture. She was such a beautiful, sweet, wonderful lady. Yeah. And, you know, the mother of our son. And so it kicked up a lot of dirt for a couple of weeks. And I tried to stay away from interviews and this and that because it just wasn't letting it go away. But now it's good. And I do Unchained Melody on stage, which is a tribute to Bobby. But I must say once in a while, you know, not once in a while, almost every time I do it, Karen pops into my head when I'm doing it. So, but I'm good now. I'm good now. And I thank God it's done.
I'm so glad you found peace and closure and that now you're out there touring, and it's just so great. Thanks for, you know, staying strong, and I'm glad you were able to bounce back and do the solo career and just find peace and happiness and great family life after that. All the best you build. Thank you so much for talking, and we can't wait to see you at the Birchmere. It's an incredible life you've lived. Do you ever look back and say, man, all the things that I've gone through, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, almost every day. I that's the one thing I wish I could, I told somebody I should just write it on a piece of paper and put it on the mirror so I see it every morning. Do you realize how blessed you are? Because I am.
It's true. Well, we are going to be blessed if we come to the Birchmere on March 26th to see you and Bucky. Keep the Righteous Brothers going. Hopefully you guys stay righteous for a lot longer. Thanks so much for joining us.
Bless you, man. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you out there.
Okay, man.
Bye.
Bye.